Does the Air Only Feel This Way? Written by Tukuxi. Read by Catalina Hart. An E-rated Heaven Official's Blessing fanfiction with a pairing of Fangxin / Mucheng, with the additional tags of asexual Mucheng, sex porn, praise kink, dom sub undertones, post-canon, emotional constipation, emotionally repressed, first time, pining, aftermath of sex porn, slow burn, canon-typical violence, and canon-typical behavior. Part 2 of the Make the Glass Shake series. Fangxin ascends alongside Mucheng, still feeling the ghost of the gentle hands in his hair. He can't remember the last time someone touched him so carefully, so cautiously. Xianlan, he thinks. His Highness pulling him out of danger, perhaps? Maybe not. Fangxin is a martial god. He fights often, spars with and trains his subordinates, fights Mucheng, banters and boxes from time to time with Pei Ming, who seems to have taken a shine to the three gods of Xianle after everything that happened. And since His Highness is so often in the mortal realm or ghost city, and Mucheng is about as sociable as a wet cat, Fangxin has found himself drinking alone with Pei Ming more than once. They're friends, maybe, as much as any martial god has friends. It's lonely, though, all the more so now that Xianlan has departed again with their son, having chosen the appeal of safe passage through the mortal world over any hope of further reconciliation with him. Over the last 800 years, Fangxin has grown accustomed to the day-to-day work of godhood. He keeps up with the never-ending prayers and occasional missions, monitors the subordinates he needs to keep in check, keeps an eye on the sidelong scheming of various Middle Heaven officials who think General Nanyang too stupid to see through the machinations. They are never as clever as they think. So it was all fine, until it wasn't. It was all fine until His Highness ascended again, until the revelation of schemes within schemes, until the unmasking of Xunwu, until a year of His Highness's sad eyes and persistent poking at the red string tied around his middle finger, until Huachang came back to His Highness's waiting arms, having cheated death again like the lucky bastard he so clearly is. Fangxin finds he had grown accustomed to being around people, in that year, visiting His Highness as often as he could manage, Mucheng usually finding out and coming along too. He misses it now that His Highness is so often absent from the heavens, from the mortal realm, now that he is so clearly happy to be otherwise occupied. Pei Ming is amusing enough company in small doses, but there is a limit to the number of sexual conquests Fangxin wants to hear about, General Xu Yang or not. The biggest change has been in his interaction with Mucheng, whose confession over a lava pit reframed so much of the last 800 years for Fangxin. General Zhanzhen is still prickly, still hard to approach, but there is a softer core there that Fangxin had known, a heartfelt desire for connection, for friendship, that he sometimes still has a hard time wrapping his head around. Mucheng has never taken the time to explain his actions, and Fangxin has all too often assumed the worst. But now he knows. When Mucheng walked away from them in exile, he wasn't selfishly cutting his losses and tossing them aside as dead weight. He was trying to ascend faster so he could help His Highness, their majesties, perhaps even Fangxin himself. When he learned about Xianlan and Fangxin's tortured ghost son, he kept the rumors to a minimum instead of exploiting them to bring about Fangxin's downfall. Mucheng knocked Fangxin out at Junwu's command, not as a self-serving lackey, but in a desperate bid to keep Fangxin safe from his own stubbornness, desperate because of Fangxin's refusal to leave for a more secure location. It's forced Fangxin into some very uncomfortable introspection these last 2 years as he watched Jilian mourn, and even more so after Jilian went off with his precious ghost king. Fangxin has been angry. He's been unhappy. He's raged about the time lost and grieved the misunderstandings between the three of them, or the two of them. And the four of them now are the only ones beside Guo Shi and Bei Wuxiang who can remember the beauty of Xianle, the anguish of its downfall. For a very, very long time it was only him and Mucheng. He doesn't want to spend another 800 years shoring up his position. He too wants a friend. But Fangxin has never been good with words. He was a bodyguard before he was a martial god. He was never trained in diplomacy and kind words and soft gestures, in saying one thing and meaning another, or even in disarming a fraught situation with carefully framed phrases. He was a disciple whose job was to keep His Highness alive, to be stronger and faster and more willing to go into danger for his sake. For God's sake, his most significant attempt at peacekeeping in Jianle had involved breaking his own arm as a distraction for His Highness. So Wu Cheng came to him with news of a low-level wrath targeting believers in an area that bordered on both their regions, Fang Xin agreeing to investigate without hesitation. He's always been a man of action, even when he can't figure out how to initiate. Knowing what he does now about Wu Cheng, how could he say no? How could he resist the urge to learn more, to move closer to an attempt at friendship? He's long known he can't have what he might once have wanted. The wrath is clever. It leads them into the mountains, into a disgustingly bloody, disemboweled corpse forest, into an ambush of dozens of Binu. Fang Xin holds them off with his bow while Wu Cheng slaughters the wrath, which explodes messily in a way that seems to be a signal for other, less powerful but more numerous ghosts to swarm them, to chase them toward what ended up being a patch of land of tender flowers. So yes, Fang Xin panicked when he realized they'd been poisoned. So he panicked more when the female-shaped root bodies rushed them, and collapsing the cave mouths was probably less wise than just ascending immediately. Mu Cheng hadn't said a thing about it at first, just explored the cave with his mouth a thin, dissatisfied line when he found no other exit. Waiting the poison out had been a faint hope. Fang Xin flinches away from the memory of his mounting, heated desperation, his rising fear of his own actions, worry over Mu Cheng's cultivation. The world shimmers around them, and Fang Xin closes his eyes for a moment against the suddenly bright light of the heavenly city as he takes a breath free from poison, from the lingering smell of sex and blood. "I'll need 6 trustworthy Middle Heaven officials from your palace," Mu Cheng tells him in his private array. "I'll come select them in disguise later." He pauses and then tests mental tone even softer, almost hesitant. "Don't take this personally." A strong yank and there are hands wrapped in the front of Fang Xin's robes. He's being shaken. Mu Cheng's right hand flies out and slaps Fang Xin hard across the cheek. A strong blow, but not a various gesture. It's as if he's Pei Ming being reprimanded by an angry human woman. There is a god's strength behind the blow, though, and Fang Xin recoils in real pain. He tries to, at least. The hand gripping his robes holds him in place, and he slapped again, a backhanded blow this time. He feels his lips split from the force of it. Fang Xin's cheeks burn from the impact and the embarrassment, both frozen in place by shock. "Fuck you," Mu Cheng hisses. His eyes are hard, expression savage, visibly betrayed. His voice is definitely loud enough to be overheard. "How dare you!" Then he shoves Fang Xin down to the pavement and strides away toward his own palace. He's limping visibly as he goes. His robes are obviously in disarray, though Fang Xin remembers Mu Cheng fussing at his sash before they ascended. The implications of his actions are obvious. Fang Xin stares after him for a moment, shocked. His face aches and he'll be a little bit surprised if he doesn't have a black eye tomorrow in addition to the split lip he can already feel bleeding onto his chin. He gets to his feet and heads for his own palace with swift, if slightly shaky, steps, hearing the buzz of gossip rising round them as he beats a hasty retreat from the main square Mu Cheng chose to have some ascent into. It's part of the plan, he reminds himself, trying not to feel hurt that Mu Cheng, again, did not warn him, did not explain in advance. He had thought, had hoped they might be past that now, but Mu Cheng had said that he would need to appear to have been defeated by the wrath, to be weakened and, Fang Xin thinks, he did tell Fang Xin not to take the blows personally. He knows they have to move swiftly now, before anyone wonders why Mu Cheng hasn't fallen from grace yet, where he's still a heavenly official after what his play acting has implied about their actions. He doesn't know what paperwork he will need to fill out exactly, beyond a request that Middle Heaven officials clean up the Bino and Land of Tender Flowers. Fang Xin storms into his palace, cheeks flaming, robes flaring around his ankles in his haste. He barks orders at subordinates. He strides to his rooms. Paperwork to be prepared, a bath to be drawn immediately, new ropes laid out, a meal laid out. He runs through potentially appropriate officials from his palace in his mind as he disrobes and baths, scrubbing himself clean with rough, slightly shaky hands. He leaves the dirtied ropes in a pile on the floor. Surely the obviously soiled state will spark gossip, will add weight to the story Mooching is building. As he dresses in clean robes, Fang Xin feels his blood stir, poison still weak in his system. He shoves seated, blurry memories to the back of his mind. He can worry about what happened in the cave where Mooching is safe, when the conspirator has been unmasked and punished. That goal is more important than his embarrassment, than the excavation of his long-buried desire for someone he's always seen as utterly untouchable, than his new-found aching want. Fang Xin was raised to be a bodyguard. If Xie Lian doesn't need him anymore, perhaps someone else could. By the time a messenger from General Zhong Zhen is reported to be at the gates, Fang Xin has a mental list of 11 candidates, paperwork and tea prepared. Mooching's stride in his disguise is even and balanced, with no sign of injury or lingering pain. Fang Xin relaxes a tiny bit, releasing tension he hadn't been consciously aware of holding onto. The wound she'd healed on Mooching's left thigh had looked more like a mauling by a particularly sharp-toothed monster than anything self-inflicted. "Go," Fang Xin says, dismissing the attendant still in the room. His office is as spy-proof as he and Mooching could make it when they worked together on rebuilding their palaces in a kind of half-amiable competition to see whose could be more secure. "I'll take care of this." Mooching releases the disguise only after the door closes and Fang Xin has raised the silencing array.
"I had to do that," Mooching says.
His eyes are trained on Fang Xin's face and his split lip. He sounds almost apologetic, which is unnerving in the extreme.
"I know," Fang Xin says, feeling offended. "You don't have to apologize, I'm not that stupid." "Who's apologizing?" Mooching shoots back, sitting up straight in outrage. "I'm just making sure we're on the same page. I know you don't like books."
Fang Xin quirks a small, relieved smile at the familiarity of the exchange. His lip stings, but he ignores it.
"Yeah," he says instead of shooting back another insult.
"I get it." He pauses.
"You warned me," he points out.
Mooching blinks at him, clearly unsettled.
"Oh," he says. "All right then."
The silence that falls between them is unfamiliar in its lack of barbs.
"I have a list of officials for you," Fang Xin says, after a long moment in which they both take sips of their tea, a floral white Fang Xin knows Mooching tends to prefer.
11 of them.
"I asked for 6, Mooching points out.
He sounds off balance, uncertain under a layer of bluster.
"Well," Fang Xin says and puts down his teacup with a click. "You're a picky bastard, so I figured I'd better let you decide some of them aren't good enough for your meticulous standards."
That jibe, oddly enough, seems to settle Mooching. He leans forward, visibly curious.
"It's not my fault so many people are utterly incompetent." He bites back, but there's no venom to it, not really.
His eyes still linger on Fang Xin's split lip, which makes Fang Xin much more aware of it, almost self-conscious.
"Let's get this over with," Fang Xin says, biting back a complaint about how hard Mooching hit him. Instead, he pulls over a group of scrolls, placing them in 3 piles. "These ones," he gestures at a stack of 3 scrolls, "are the most discreet. These ones," he gestures at a stack of 5, "are the ones that I can easily create my own clones of so their absence won't be noted. And these ones," he says, finally gesturing at the last stack of 3, "have the most experience in the mortal realm." Mooching looks at him, blinks, and then takes a top scroll from the first pile, beginning to read without another word. Fang Xin pours them both more tea, pushes it to Mooching without a word. Then he starts going through the list of prayers that have built up in his absence. Because the idea of watching Mooching read is both intensely awkward and far too appealing. He steals a glance despite himself. Mooching's hair is still faintly damp, wisping slightly around his hairline despite how put together his robes and overall appearance are. Fang Xin suppresses an expression that almost feels like it wants to be a smile and goes back to sorting prayers. Some time later, Muqing looks up. He's pulled two scrolls from each stack and pushes them across the desk at Fangxin and Pears.
Will these ones work well together? Muqing asks.
Fangxin looks at the names and thinks it over. Then he swaps two of the scrolls, the two officials with the most experience in the mortal realm.
Better this way, he says, expecting a question, a demand for an explanation.
Instead, Muqing just nods. He looks again at the six selected dossiers, makes a note of their names in neatly aligned pairs on a separate piece of paper, and pushes the whole heap of scrolls back across the desk at Fangxin.
Do you have the passwords? He asks.
It's a rude question, even if his tone is flat. First of all, of course Fangxin knows how to communicate with his own officials, but it's the implicit question that's more worrisome. Giving out someone else's area password isn't forbidden, exactly. It's simply not often done outside of an emergency, and sometimes not even then. Fangxin must make a face because Muqing holds up his hands. He looks almost cautious as if he thinks Fangxin will turn him down. When has Fangxin ever denied him something that mattered this much?
It's more scheming, I know, Muqing says. He sounds defensive, like he's expecting criticism, like he thinks he'll be required to justify his actions.
But, and he pauses, I can't contact them publicly, and I can't be seen in your palace right now.
Fangxin would do worse for Muqing than give out a subordinate's array passwords without warning. Has he really not realized that yet?
But Fangxin doesn't say anything. He's never been good with words, and he's not going to fuck things up now. Instead, he holds out his hand for the piece of paper and the brush. Muqing blinks at him, then hands them over, sitting utterly silent as Fangxin writes out the passwords in small, neat brush strokes. Fangxin sits back, waves a hand over the paper to let the ink dry, and looks up to see Muqing frowning at him.
Here, Fangxin says. He looks down and points out two of the names.
These two might cooperate better if you don't tell them I know. They'll be trying to spy on you to surprise me,
Muqing snorts. They'll all be trying to spy on me, he points out.
Fangxin only shrugs. It's true enough. Two of the names Muqing rejected are junior officials he knows to be on good terms with Muqing's own palace's staff, from whom he regularly receives reports in the course of normal events. The fact that Muqing rejected them could be a sign that Muqing knows they're spying and doesn't want them involved in this matter as a result. It could be a sign that Muqing knows and is leaving Fangxin's spy network intact on purpose. It could be accidental. Fangxin doesn't even consider the possibility that Muqing is unaware of their actions.
I thought I was too stupid to scheme like that, he asks, keeping his tone light through sheer force of will. It's been a common enough insult these last centuries.
Muqing looks over at him. His mouth visibly works as if he's struggling for words. His expression is almost conflicted. He bites his lip, then shakes his head very slightly.
He says, and he looks down at the paper. I'm sure you have work to do.
That is from Muqing as good as a thank you. Muqing bends over, plucks the paper from Fangxin's desk and tucks it into his sleeve. Then he shimmers back into his disguise. He stands, drops the teacup on the stone floor, flings the door open with a bang, and storms out in what appears, to all intents and purposes, to be a towering rage almost worthy of General Zhan Zhen himself. Fangxin puts the personal scrolls in a basket to be refiled, along with the other 30 or so he pulled as a precaution against wagging tongues or undue attention. When the junior officials on duty comes back in, Fangxin is drinking his own tea, ignoring the spreading puddle on the floor surrounding the shards of a teacup he had actually quite liked, even as new as it was.
That was loud? His subordinate offers.
He's clearly fishing. Fangxin is fairly certain this one spies for Muqing out of nothing more than sheer busy-mindedness and desire for drama.
Not as loud as if it had been General Zhan Zhen, Fangxin says, doing his best to keep a straight face.
Clean that up, he directs, gesturing at the floor. Then get me the forms for reporting an infestation of Binu and one for the Land of Tender, he says. We're going to have to send someone to take care of both of those things.
He looks over at the attendant, who is kneeling and picking up the shattered pieces of the teacup.
Coordinate with General Zhan Zhen's staff, he says. I don't want him bitching about me interfering in his territory. The man complies and clearly mentions the forms to someone else, which Fangxin had both expected and dreaded. Within an hour, the main heavenly area is buzzing with the news that Generals Nanyang and Runjen were exposed to the land of Tender and forced to endure it, together. Those who saw Muqing slap Fangxin in the main square spin more and more elaborate versions of the events they witnessed, until virtually no one in the heavens has any doubt that Runjen's cultivation woes have been thoroughly broken. "Did you see his robes?" one of the literature gods hisses. "Runjen is never in such disarray. He was limping too." Fangxin doesn't recognize that voice, which is a good thing, because it means he can't go herring off to disembowel the bastard for the presumption of a statement. "I wonder if it's true what they say about General Zhuyang," someone says. "His gigantic masculinity." Fangxin slams out of the array in a heartbeat, face flushed bright red. "The gall! He's known the gods' gossip worse than the aunties at the Xianle Palace had done, worse than the women and customers at Xianlan's brothel. For so many of them, it's the only occupation after all, but this is too shameless." "Fangxin," Muqing's voice sounds in his head as he scrambles for words, trying to figure out who said what, who he has to confront. "Don't do anything. Don't fuck this up by being oversensitive." Fangxin glowers at the empty air. "Oversensitive," he demands. "Do you hear what they think I..." He rails off. "They all think I raped you," he can't say, but that's what it comes down to. Two of the heavens' most powerful remaining martial gods got caught in a ridiculous demonic trap, and all the Eric cares about is a gossip factor, and not the harm that may result to anyone involved, the potential fallout. What would happen to Muqing if that were true? What harm might come to his believers as a result if Muqing fell from grace? Fangxin has to quirk a small smile at himself. He sounds like his highness worrying about the common people like this. "This is a plan," Muqing hisses in his mind. "If you can't take the heat, stay out of the array. It'll look better anyway, like you're regretful or ashamed. Let people think you're hiding from me." "Muqing is a cold-as-ice, scheming, manipulative asshole," Fangxin thinks, impressed despite himself. He keeps it to himself. Muqing would only take it the wrong way. "Fine," he replies instead. "Tell me when you need my help." Muqing laughs in the private array and exits without a word. The rest of the day is occupied with paperwork. Fangxin sent three officials of his own down with two of Muqing's to wipe out the Bino and incinerate the land of Tender infestation. They are flushed when they return, but it seems to be embarrassment rather than poisoning. All are still wearing the bandages around their noses and mouths that had saved the young soldier in Xianle. None of them will meet his eyes, and he wonders what the flower monster said, what his officials are hearing in the array. For all that Fangxin might not be enormously self-aware, he knows himself well enough to be certain that if he enters the heavenly array and hears what people are saying about Muqing, he'll be swearing and knocking heads together in retaliation before he can stop himself. Besides, he thinks, in the tiny quiet corner of his mind that he's tried to ignore for so long. Muqing told him to stay silent. This is something he can do, a command he can obey, a way he can be of service. The next morning brings a blossoming black eye that Fangxin heals with a thought, though he's left the split lip alone for reasons he doesn't examine too closely. It brings sidelong looks from junior officials and no small amount of whispering. He sets up clones of his junior officials when two of them contact him. One is curious but shy, the other one is flustered. He tells them each to make themselves useful, dammit, and not to bother him unless Muqing tells them to. Answering prayers keeps his focus for much of the morning. Training some of his subordinates in the afternoon is so routine that his mind wanders. Fangxin does not tap into his clone's hearing, does not spy on the people they are interacting with, does not enter the array. Instead, he has four newly appointed officials attempt to disarm him with their choice of life weapons and spiritual energy attacks. That was, he thinks, looking around the courtyard in the aftermath of a very unsatisfying but impressively destructive fight, probably a bad idea. Wang Lao staggers to her feet, hair singed from the firewall she only barely evaded and frizzy from the lightning strike she had launched at him. "General," she says and bows, "this one apologizes. Fang Xin cuts her off. Why are you apologizing? He demands. You didn't even hit me. She blinks at him, still half bowed, and he pulls her upright. Her gaze flits aside to the other three officials who are laid out on the stone of the courtyard in varying states of singe and char. Get them to the infirmary, he says, gesturing at the other three. It's not his fault, or her fault. The other three of them didn't dodge her lightning strike swiftly enough, even as an attempted pincer with his, perhaps in retrospect somewhat extravagant, wall of flame. Lightning stings, but they'll be fine. She looks doubtful. Practice with them at half strength, he says. They should be able to see that coming, he meets her eyes. Don't apologize for winning a fight, he says. Train with them more so it's a better match next time. She blinks at him. Yes, General, she says and goes over to help the least injured man to his feet. Wang Lao is competent for all that he only appointed her a few decades ago. She'll see to the others. Someone clears the throat in what sounds like a poorly concealed chuff of laughter. Fang Xin turns to see General Pei Ming standing there in his usual elaborate robes. He's eschewed the armor today, which means Fang Xin can't challenge him to a duel. Boring, Fang Xin thinks and hears the echo of Zhuan Yizhen in his tone. Are you coming in or not? Fang Xin demands, sheathing his sword and striding into his office. Pei Ming will follow or he won't. It's none of Fang Xin's concern if he decides to leave. Friendly as always, General Nanyang, Pei Ming says as he follows without complaint, settles himself into what is fast becoming his usual chair in Fang Xin's outer office. Strangely though, Pei Ming does not immediately launch into conversation. What? Fang Xin demands. Pei Ming is staring at him oddly. So he did hit you, Pei Ming says, and he sounds uncharacteristically thoughtful. I figured that was all trumped up, Fang Xin scowls. Are you just here to dig for gossip then? He demands. Because if you are, you can fuck off. Pei Ming leans back, hands braced on his thighs. He looks serious for once, and Fang Xin sees in him a hint of the general who won a hard-fought war. The god who had lost several descendants to heavenly intrigue, the strategist who has outrun the negative sides of his reputation for longer than Fang Xin has been alive or ascended himself. He's not leaving his palace, Pei Ming says, and it's clear he's talking about Mu Qing. Rumors are flying faster than Crimson Rain's cursed butterflies, but you'd sooner cut off your own limbs than hurt him. So what really happened? Fang Xin blinks. We fight all the time, he points out. They destroy huge blocks of the capital when they really get into it. He broke Mu Qing's leg in two places the last time they fought seriously. Yes, yes, Pei Ming says, as if that's completely beside the point. But you'd never hurt him. His expression is still serious, almost insightful. Fang Xin glares at him. We got poisoned and we got trapped, he said. It sucked. Read the report of Ling Wen is speaking to you again. Ling Wen is not, in fact, on good terms with Pei Ming at the moment, a fact Fang Xin is deeply grateful for right now. Pei Ming's expression flickers with annoyance, but he refuses to take the bait. There will be a serious power vacuum if he falls, Pei Ming says. Maybe I'm worried about that. Fang Xin shrugs, affecting a nonchalance he does not feel. The impact on the mortal realm will be bad if someone takes Mu Qing out. The infighting in the heavens will be worse. But it's the thought of Mu Qing descending, becoming mortal again, dying, that is Fang Xin's heart in an inexorably painful grasp. He can't stand to lose anyone else. Not now. He can't ever lose Mu Qing. So go talk to Zhuan Zhen, he says. I can't answer your questions. You've got it bad, Pei Ming says. He sounds almost comforted, which is really bizarre. Where's your hospitality? I know you have some decent booze around you somewhere. Let me tell you about my last trip. Fang Xin summons an attendant with wine and peanuts and settles in to let Pei Ming wax poetic about the moon-pale beauty he seduced this time. She, at least, appears to have known exactly what she was getting herself in for, so there's no risk of another Zhuan Ji. If Fang Xin's thoughts stray from time to time to the remembered sight of Mu Qing and the cold light of the array, wreathed in light visibly disheveled, that's no one's business but his own. They drink, and Pei Ming carries the conversation with boasting, as he often does, and Fang Xin feels something settle in his chest, just a little bit. Surely it won't be that bad. Several days later, he is reconsidering that assessment and glaring daggers at Hua Chang, who has the gall to have accompanied his highness to Fang Xin's palace without any kind of warning or invitation. Mu Qing has yet to be seen outside of his palace. His spies report that General Zhuan Zhen shouts orders from behind closed doors and will not let anyone see him. Rumors are going wild, and even though Fang Xin has still not entered the main array, he knows the whole heavens are stirred up to a fever pitch with speculation. Sunlong, His Highness says, and the level of hostility in the air drops by perhaps 10%. Be nice. I'm not a nice person, Gogo, Hua Chang says, which is one of the few things he's ever said that Fang Xin agrees with. Yes, you are, His Highness says, because he's a complete fucking idiot when it comes to Crimson Rain Sword Flower. You can be, he says, and laces his fingers together with Hua Chang, squeezing gently. It's sickeningly sweet, domestic, and familiar. Fang Xin glares at Hua Chang harder. Jealous? Hua Chang asks him in the area so His Highness can't hear him being a snake. As if, Fang Xin shoots back. It's the truth. He's never wanted His Highness's attention in that way. Hua Chang settles slightly and His Highness pets his hand gently. We've heard some concerning rumors, His Highness says. Might we talk privately? Fang Xin lets them into his office, sends for His Highness's favorite Yunnan Gushu black tea, ignoring the fact that he now knows Hua Chang dislikes its slightly fruity flavor and prefers an aged white. When it has arrived, he closes the door and casts a silence array. Sure, they could talk in the array, but he doesn't want Hua Chang in his head if he can avoid it, and the feeling seems to be mutual. Have you heard from Mu Qing? His Highness asks. Oh, shit, Fang Xin thinks. He doesn't know how to handle this. Mu Qing, he sends into the private array. His Highness is here asking about you. You didn't tell him what happened? Fuck off, Mu Qing sends back. He sounds out of breath, which is concerning. Figure it out yourself, I'm a little busy right now. Fang Xin, His Highness asks, what's going on? Hua Chang sips His Highness's favorite tea with an expression of repressed distaste that Fang Xin probably shouldn't treasure quite so much. I'm fine, Fang Xin says, thinking fast. He feels himself flush. We went to take care of a situation in the south last week, he says. It turned out to be a Roth kidnapping people and pretending to be Qirong, he says. His Highness's brow furrows, he hurries on. We took care of that, but... He shoots a glare at Hua Chang, who glares right back and crosses his legs, stupid silver bells jangling ostentatiously. It was a trap, he says. Several severe ghosts showed up when it died, and a few dozen Bino, he continues. He takes a breath, because this is the worst part. And we were herded into a land of Tenderplot, and then into a cave, he says, omitting the part where he panicked and trapped them in the cave. His Highness takes a sharp breath, hands balling into tight fists on his thighs, and Fang Xin berates himself for not leading into it more discreetly. His Highness has such bad memories of the Land of Tender. But Fang Xin isn't a diplomat. He was trained to give military reports, not to eloquently dance around hard facts. Mu Qing is, for all his bluster, better at that kind of talk. Hua Chang reaches out and covers His Highness's fist with one of his own, pressing gently, gentling his grasp. His hands are bigger than His Highness's ghost, pale against His Highness's now tanned skin. Gurgle, he says, and his voice is almost tender. We don't know what happened. He looks over at Fang Xin, gaze hard. It was a trap, Fang Xin blurts. It's not the first time he's been drugged like this either, Fang Xin says. He pauses. Mu Qing set up a barrier between us. He says because it's important that His Highness know that. In the cave, so he's fine, he insists. He steps the shit out of his leg, he says. But he's fine. Don't listen to rumors, he insists. He's got a plan. Mu Qing always has a plan. It's one of the things Fang Xin finds baffling about him. One of the things he's never understood. Why have so many contingency plans, so many backups, so many what-ifs? Feng Xin has done what is asked of him his whole life without needing to scheme. But he's come to realize, Mu Qing sees the world very differently, having grown up without any of the certainty Feng Xin took for granted.
Yes, Hua Cheng says, tone dry.
I'm sure he does. That's why he just stormed the Gamla's den and dragged off a poorly disguised heavenly official by the hair. Alone. An intricate plan.
Sun Lung, His Highness chides. He looks over at Feng Xin.
It was alarming, he says. We thought perhaps you might know...
But Feng Xin is already in his personal array.
Mu Qing, you utter shithead! You stubborn fuckwit! He yells. You said you'd tell me when you needed help.
If there is another trap, if something happens to Mu Qing, Feng Xin feels his chest tightening as he considers it.
No, Mu Qing replies. You told me to ask for help. I don't need help. I'm fine.
He's always fine, Feng Xin thinks. He never asks for help, never shows weakness. That he had allowed Feng Xin to heal his injured legs before they ascended was probably a minor miracle.
Where the fuck are you? Feng Xin demands. His Highness and that asshole husband of his are here asking questions because you made a scene in Ghost City. What the fuck?
Mu Qing hears a soft oof sound in the array. Feng Xin knows that sound. It's the sound of a solid blow landing and landing hard. Mu Qing is in the middle of a fight.
Where the fuck are you, you asshole? He mentally screams.
He might be making a face. He can't tell.
Fuck off, Mu Qing replies. I don't need your help. And he cuts off the connection.
Feng Xin, His Highness asks. He looks worried. Hua Cheng looks almost amused, like this is some kind of show arranged for his personal entertainment.
He's fighting something, Feng Xin says. That stubborn...
His Highness and Hua Cheng exchange a glance.
I'm sure he'll be fine, His Highness says. Mu Qing isn't inclined to be rash. If he's taken this on alone, he shrugs. He's more than capable, he concludes.
He looks serene, unbothered. Hua Cheng gently swipes his thumb across the back of His Highness's hand, and he turns his hand over, palm to palm, and laces their finger together. Feng Xin wants to shake His Highness until his teeth rattle for being so unconcerned. Only a combination of long-honed obedience and the knowledge that Hua Cheng would remove his hand at the wrist with that creepy saber of his hold him back.
Of course, he says. Of course you will be. The alternative is unthinkable.
But His Highness didn't see Mu Qing under the poison spell, the way he kept stabbing himself, flushed and desperate to resist. Feng Xin isn't sure which was worse, the desperation or the resignation he'd heard in Mu Qing's voice when he mentioned previous such attempts. That Feng Xin remained so long unaware of attacks on his fellow general stings his pride.
You doubt him? Hua Cheng asks. His voice is silky soft, dangerous.
Feng Xin glares at him.
Of course not, he exclaims. Don't be stupid, Crimson Rain. He can take care of himself.
It's true, after all. Mu Qing ascended before Feng Xin and has kept his place in the heavens despite everything for 800 years. He's managed it despite more robust attacks than anyone knew. Somehow that doesn't make Feng Xin feel better about Mu Qing going after this particular foe alone. His Highness looks politely confused. Hua Cheng quirks a sarcastic eyebrow.
I'm just... Feng Xin sputters.
He should have told me, he bites out. I was attacked too.
You were collateral damage at best, Hua Cheng sniffs.
Don't think so highly of yourself. Feng Xin opens his mouth to reply, but His Highness shakes his head very slightly.
Sun Lang, he says, didn't you have something to tell Feng Xin?
Hua Cheng turns to His Highness, expression brightening like the sky in the moments before dawn. His features darken when he faces Feng Xin. He pulls a scroll out of his sleeve and places it on the desk, pushing it across with two fingers.
I've destroyed the ashes of the known associates of the wrath in question, he says. These were their names.
Feng Xin blinks at him, shocked.
Say thank you to Gogo, Hua Cheng snaps, as if I'd waste my time on you trash otherwise.
Feng Xin glances at His Highness, who's smiling very faintly.
Whoever Mu Qing dragged out of the gambler's den, His Highness says as Hua Cheng mutters a name that sounds like Cao Jun under his breath. He would have been counting on having backup that no longer exists.
Shit, Fangxin breathes. He nods his head in gratitude.
Thank you, he says. He's still angry. He hates being left behind, and he'd been lying if he said he didn't want to get his hands on the asshole who orchestrated their setup. But he's less terrified than he was before, and that's a relief. Jilian takes a dainty sip of his tea, managing to look every inch the crown prince despite his plain robes, his ever-present shabby straw hat.
This is my favorite, he says.
Fangxin flushes and his highness smiles.
You remembered, he says, and he sounds faintly surprised and a little bit pleased.
Huacheng scowls and Fangxin shoots him a glare. Crimson Rain isn't the only one who's allowed to remember his highness's favorites or be nice to him. The moment hovers, delicate, and Fangxin takes a sip of his own tea. It's fruitier than he prefers, but he's not about to admit that now.
Yeah, Fangxin says. He looks at the scroll on his desk and makes up his mind.
Thank you, he says again and puts his teacup down. If your highness will excuse me, he says, half ignoring Huacheng, I...
Yes, of course, his highness says, and he's smiling very faintly.
Huacheng puts his own teacup down as well and pulls his highness closer.
Are we done here, Gugu? He asks. Can we go home?
It takes only the barest knot for them to dissolve in a swarm of those fucking creepy silver butterflies.
Fangxin grabs the scroll as soon as they've disappeared and skims it, eyes going wide in disbelief. Then he storms over to General Zhanzhen's palace.
Muqing has to come back eventually, and he's not going to wait to hear about it through the array. For one thing, he'd probably have to beat a few dozen faces in if he pops into the array now for being disrespectful, gossipy little shits. For another, he's not sure Muqing will make a production of his return and Fangxin isn't willing to wait.
Muqing's staff attempt to bar his entry, and Fangxin ignores them, barreling through into the main hall where he can see all the major entry points.
He plops down onto the ground, ignoring the several Middle Heaven officials who flutter around him in perfectly arranged robes, fussing about what their general will say on his return.
He'll be pissed, Fangxin says, looking at them, but I'll beat your heads in if you try to make me leave, so fuck off.
He must be exuding nearly as much anger as he feels, because the officials take one look at his expression and flee, all but one.
General Nanyang, the woman says. She's not one of Fangxin's spies. That's all Fangxin knows about her. She takes a deep breath and bows, alarmingly low.
This lowly one begs you to help General Zhanzhen in any way possible, she says. This one does not know what happened, but does not believe the rumors to be true, she continues.
Please, General Zhanzhen is prickly and sharp-tongued, but he is good to his subordinates and believers, she says. This one begs you to talk sense into him.
She looks like she's considering dropping to her knees before him, tone beseeching and distraught in equal shares.
Fangxin huffs out a breath, anger banking in the face of her sincere devotion.
Get up, he says, and his tone is too sharp, but she straightens. Where the fuck do you think I'm here? He demands.
It's not well phrased, but something makes her look at him again and then smile.
This one's thanks, General Nanyang, she says, very formally, and then quirks what looks almost like a conspiratorial grin.
No one will warn General Zhanzhen that he has a visitor, she says, and leaves Fangxin alone.
Fangxin sits for an indeterminate period of time, musing over the list of names he holds in his sleeve. One of them was another Ross. Several were Severs. All were in the pay of the same heavenly official, Cao Jun, who is the god Muqing dragged out of the gambler's den earlier. General Cao Jun is a fairly minor western god who has been falling on hard times recently, declining in importance of his followers flocked to other deities and temples, especially after the revelation of Cao Jun's abject cowardice in the fight against Sun Wu. Many of his followers have flocked to General Zhanzhen as the martial god of the southwest.
Fangxin sits uncharacteristically still. He waits.
Finally, the doors are flung open and Muqing storms in. His robes are torn in several places, his hair untidy, and he looks like he just went up against Ruan Yijian bare-handed and won. Something settles in Fangxin's chest.
What are you doing here? Muqing snaps.
The doors slam behind him and no subordinates enter the room. Fangxin suspects the hand of that particularly bold female official, even as he reassesses the situation. Waiting, Fangxin snaps back. Because some asshole didn't seem to think I needed to know he was going off to fight Cao Jun, alone. Mu Qing stares at him, visibly shocked, then pivots. Since when do I need your help? He demands. Get out. Fangxin flinches internally. He knows Mu Qing doesn't want his help, that's clear, that's been clear, but something in him still clamors to give it. He attacked me too, Fangxin spits back at him, counter-attacking instead of giving ground. Maybe I wanted a chance to get a few blows in on my own behalf, Mu Qing sneers at him. You were just collateral damage, he says, unwittingly echoing Crimson Rain Sword Flower's words. Anyone would have done as well. Anyone else might not have done what Fangxin did, though. Someone with less practice ignoring inconvenient wants, spurring impossible desire, might have hurt Mu Qing. The plot might have succeeded if he had been anyone else. Fangxin is too angry for words. He grabs a scroll from inside his sleeve and launches it at Mu Qing's head. Mu Qing catches it without a glance, motion smooth and graceful, visibly uninjured. Fuck you, Mu Qing says. You first, Mu Qing shoots back, but he's already unrolling the scroll, though, skimming its tidy columns. His highness must have been the one to write it, Fangxin knows. What is this? Mu Qing demands, color rising in his cheeks. He looks up at Fangxin. He looks almost alarmed. Fangxin wants to punch him. He wants to tidy his hair and look after him. He can't do either of those things, so he explains. Those are the ghosts Crimson Rain destroyed, he says. The ones who would have fought for Zhao Jun today if his highness hadn't stepped in for you, he scowls. It was a trap, you fuckwit, he says. He balls his hands into fists and stands. It was another trap. He strides forwards and pokes a finger into Mu Qing's chest. It would have worked, he says. Look at that list and tell me you could have gotten through all of them in a god without something going wrong. He might have. Fangxin hopes he would have. But hope is a fragile thing and Fangxin is unwilling to hang very much on it anymore. So what? Mu Qing demands. You'd expand your territory. Don't pretend you care. Fangxin steps back, shocked. Fuck you too, he says. They're being too loud. He doesn't have it in himself to care. Would it kill you to accept her for once in your life? Mu Qing's head whips up to stare at him. Help? He demands. Since when have you wanted to help me? Fangxin has only ever wanted to help the people he cares about. With Mu Qing he's only been able to fight. He'd hoped the two wouldn't be mutually exclusive, not for them. You asshole, Fangxin says, too angry to hold back. Some people aren't actually scheming against you. Did it ever occur to you that I might not want you gone? He can't think of anything worse than Mu Qing being gone. Mu Qing scoffs and Fangxin feels himself flush darker with anger. What? He demands. Like I'd believe that, Mu Qing says. His hands are shaking. He's flushed and angry and looks almost as he had in the cave. Go fuck yourself. Fangxin stares at him and feels a treacherous wave of heat wash over himself. He didn't mean it that way, he tells himself, but it's too late. Mu Qing knows him as well as he knows himself, after all. Oh, Mu Qing says and takes a small step forward. You like that idea? Fuck off, Fangxin says. There is not enough anger in it to cover the nameless worry, the dread. The cave you could choke up to poison, what would this mean? I don't think so, Mu Qing says. I'm not the one who likes fucking. How can he just say that, Fangxin thinks, head spinning. But you do, Mu Qing says. His tone is almost speculative, inexorable. Not that you have the first idea what to do with yourself, he says. Fangxin bristles and Mu Qing glares at him. Shut up, he says. Fangxin feels his mouth closed as if he's being compelled. It would be easier if he were being compelled, less damning. What is that? Mu Qing muses. That reaction. Do you want me to order you around, I wonder? Fangxin has stopped breathing. He makes a strangled sound, a half gasp. Is that it? Mu Qing says. He sounds halfway amused, half something Fangxin can't identify. It's disorienting. You want me to tell you what to do again, like in the cave? Fangxin takes a deep breath, shocked. He'd thought they were never going to mention that. Heat suffuses his body of the memories, and he bites back the first dozen things that come to mind. All rejections, denials, refusals. Lies. He's never been good with words. Now he has to find the shape of the truth. And if I did, he demands, finally. It feels insufficient. He looks away, down to the ground beside Mu Qing. He can't look at that flushed face, color high from the fight, from their argument, from the things he's just said, and not want to crush their mouths together. Can't look at that perfect hair and not want to wind his finger through it. His own skull prickles with a phantom touch of Mu Qing's achingly gentle hands. Mu Qing doesn't respond and Fangxin feels defeat weigh down his shoulders. It doesn't matter, he says. Your cultivation is fine, Mu Qing cuts him off. Obviously. Fangxin looks up, startled. That isn't the rejection he was so sure was coming. He blinks and he must look confused because Mu Qing laughs, a little sharp, a little bitter, maybe a little surprised. He turns away, then extends a hand beckoning for Fangxin to follow. We're not discussing this here, Mu Qing says in the array. Come on. Fangxin feels shaky, off balance from the abrupt end to the argument. His blood is up, expecting a fight, angry enough to tear up the streets again, no matter the fines they'd face from Ling Wen's staff. It seems like he's not going to get one. Instead, he follows. He knows how to follow. After his highness sent him away, he followed Mu Qing's footsteps. He ascended second and clawed his way out of the ranks of mediocre martial gods and to a position of prominence tied with a man who seemed to want only to be his rival. Fangxin keeps his eyes trained on Mu Qing's robes, the fluttering sleeves, the faintly stained hem. He almost runs into Mu Qing's back when he comes to an abrupt halt, then shoves the door open with a small, fiercely controlled burst of spiritual energy, like he's disarming a trap, unlocking an array. Well, Mu Qing demands, stepping over the threshold. His back is still turned, moving farther into the room. Are you coming in? Fangxin follows, then stops dead in the doorway, eyes going wide. It's unmistakably Mu Qing's bedroom. The room is neither small nor large. Fangxin's martial eye sees that the walls are thick and the floor stone, the window small and barred inside and out. The door was locked with an area attuned to Mu Qing's spiritual energy. The implication, after what Mu Qing let slip in the cave, are horrifying. Where Fangxin's bedroom is a refuge, Mu Qing's, with bars on the windows, is almost a kind of cage. Mu Qing walks over and perches on a chair. The furniture is simple but less ascetic than Fangxin might have expected if he'd ever allowed himself to imagine the inside of this room. He has, despite himself, imagined this room. Close the door, Mu Qing says. His expression is sharp, considering. Unless you'd rather pretend nothing happened for the next 800 years. He offers. It might be a barb, phrased as it is. It might be meant as a goad. It sounds oddly, almost sincere. Fangxin steps in, closes the door behind himself. Do you need to do anything to it? He asks. To relock it? Mu Qing cocks his head to one side. You noticed that? He asks. His eyes soften almost imperceptibly. It's already set, he says. Then he grins, suddenly predatory, looking every inch the warrior Fangxin fights against and fights beside, the powerful martial god who takes down monsters and ghosts and, apparently, other gods without a hint of hesitation. You can't leave unless I let you out, he says. Fangxin shivers. Here's how this will work, Mu Qing says. You don't get to touch me. If you do what I say, I'll let you come. If you don't follow my instructions, I won't. Fangxin nods. Strip, Mu Qing says and leans back in the chair, propping his forearms on the chair's wide arms. He looks like a king enthroned. Fangxin hesitates. Well, Mu Qing says. Was that too complex an instruction? He scoffs. Start with your sword and belts, he says. Hang them up there, he gestures. Don't make a mess, I won't pick up after you.
Muqing used to pick up after him, Fangxin doesn't say. He used to dress his highness, to sweep clean the courtyards for Fangxin's only responsibilities were martial training and meditation. Fangxin's hands move to his belts and he unfastens them with steady gestures. He doesn't know where this is going. He wants to find out. Good, Muqing says, when Fangxin hangs them over the indicated chair back. His sword swings gently before coming to a halt. Fangxin feels the prey shoot through his body like a lightning strike. He holds still through sheer force of will. He is growing hard, desire flowing through him fast and strong like nothing he's felt in centuries.
You like that, Muqing muses.
Outer ropes, he says. Fold them neatly. Fangxin peels off the embroidered outer layer of his robes, flushing slightly as his erection is made visible when he parts the thicker fabric. He straightens the seams, folds the robes carefully into a neat rectangle, places them on the seat of the chair. Then he stands still, hands at his sides.
Inner robes, Muqing says. One layer only.
Fangxin pulls them off as well. The air in the room isn't chilly, but he shivers nonetheless. He starts to fold them.
Stop, Muqing raps out.
Fangxin freezes.
Did I tell you to do that? Muqing asks.
His voice is soft, clearly enunciated.
I don't think I did, he says. Weren't you going to follow instructions? He asks.
Fangxin feels himself flush and lets the ropes hang, half folded from his hands. He doesn't know what he did wrong. He wants to know. He wants to comply.
Answer me, Muqing presses.
Yes, Fangxin says.
Yes, I told you to do that, Muqing says. Or yes, you were going to follow instructions.
The second one, Fangxin says. You said to... Muqing interrupts him.
I said to fold the outer ropes, not these ones, he says. I don't need you to show initiative here, Fangxin. He continues and his tone is sharp. I need you to do what you're told. Exactly what you're told. Only, he pauses, what you're told.
It should be humiliating, Fangxin thinks, to be berated for something as small as folding his robes without explicit instruction. Instead, it's oddly thrilling.
Yes, he says and waits.
Fine, Muqing says. Go lay them out on the bed. I don't want you messing things up later. Fangxin's heart beats fast at the implication of that. His blood is racing, arousal clouding his mind, and he pads over to the bed. It's larger than he'd expected, with a thicker mattress. He bends over and lays out the ropes, splaying the smooth fabric wide to cover almost the whole surface.
Now the next layer, head to foot, Muqing directs.
Spread out sleeves. Fangxin strips his last layer of ropes and shivers, bending over the bed in nothing but trousers, shoes, and hair ornaments to do as he's told. Muqing gestures for him to move aside, and Fangxin does, watching the expression on his face.
Acceptable, Muqing says. Sit down and take off your boots.
Fangxin blinks at him, then sits on the floor. Muqing makes a surprised sound, shakes his head in Fangxin's peripheral vision.
You idiot, Muqing says.
He sounds almost fond, which makes no sense.
Put them beside the chair when you're done, Muqing says. Then go sit on the bed.
Fangxin complies. His hands seem to be moving independent of his control, as if he's watching someone else pull off his boots, stand, and place them next to his hanging sword belt, his folded robes. He moves to the bed and perches on the edge of it, aching as a movement drags the cloth of his trousers across his straining cock. He hasn't been this hard in years. Longer, maybe.
Look at you, Muqing says, softer now, as if he's talking to himself.
He raises his voice.
Stay there, he says. You can touch yourself, he says.
That's so unspecific as to be impossible to understand. Fangxin just looks at him, then wets his lips and asks,
where?
Muqing's lips curve into a domineering smile.
Good question, he replies.
Your chest, he says. Run one hand along it. Fangxin complies. He doesn't often take the time for this. Wouldn't have said he was particularly sensitive. Not like some people were said to be, but it's different now. It's different now with Muqing's eyes on him. feeling his own hands moving in Muching's direction. His hands are broad, he's always known that. They're warm and callous from sword and bow. He's always known that too. It never occurred to him before that he might feel that, not like this. He runs his right hand across his own chest and arches into the touch, gasping out a breath when his fingertips brush the hard peak of a nipple. Harder, Muching says. Pinch it. Fangxin does and feels the breath get punched out of him at the jolt of sensation that runs from his nipple to his cock. Again, Muching says and Fangxin does. He feels like he's submerged now as Muching directs his hands, draws him across his skin like a master calligrapher moving a brush. His words flow through the room, his gaze cool, hands loose on the arms of the chair. He's visibly unaffected by arousal, though Fangxin can feel the weight of his attention. Again, Muching directs and proceeds to render Fangxin a gasping wreck. When Fangxin is on the verge of begging, Muching pauses. Remove your hands and take down your hair, he says. Put the pins by the bed. Fangxin blinks at him, blinks again, hands still hot on his own skin. He wants just a little bit more. He's so close. He closes his eyes and moves his hands away, begins to undo his hair, feeling the pull of the styling release, the weight of it against her shoulders. He's thankful that he's never gone in for the kinds of complicated hairstyling that was so popular in the Jianle court, is still so popular among some of the gods of the heavenly court. His hands barely obey him now. Very good, Muching says when he sets the pins on the table with a sharp click. Fangxin shudders, hips jerking. Are you close? Muching asks. He sounds interested in a kind of abstract way. Fangxin wants to laugh. Isn't it obvious? He wants to swear for being denied. He nods instead, hands gripping his outspread robes. He wants to touch himself again, but he hasn't been told what to do yet. Good, Muching says. Take off your trousers. You can leave them unfolded on the bed, he says. Fangxin chucks them off in haste, placing them beside him. His cock is achingly hard, straining toward his belly. The tip is already wet. He wants so desperately to touch. Show me, Muching says. Lie down and touch your cock for me. Show me what you like. Fangxin slams himself onto his back so hard the bed frame shakes, hand flying to his erection immediately. It's too dry and he hardly cares, jacking himself without finesse, eyes screwed shut as he pants after his release. Stop, Muching says, voice sharp. Fangxin's hand jerks. He whimpers. He stops. Not like that, Muching says, tone sarcastic. If I wanted to see such utterly ridiculous desperation, I'd spy on Pei Ming. Fangxin growls at the idea. His hand is hot on his cock. He aches for friction, for contact, for just that little bit more to get him over the edge. He doesn't move. Spit in your hand, Muching directs, and Fangxin almost comes just from hearing it. He opens his eyes and stares, utterly shocked. What? Muching asks. He sounds amused. You think I'm deaf? Fangxin shakes his head. He spits in his hand, flushing at the idea that Muching is watching him. Again, Muching says, and he does. Now go slowly, Muching says. Tell me what you prefer. Don't just fuck your hand like an animal. Fangxin touches himself slowly this time, his grasp slick and hot and far too good. He tosses his head back against his inner robes and gasps at the sensation. It doesn't feel like his own hand. It doesn't feel like he's in control at all. He is shocked by how much he loves it. Like that, Muching directs. A little harder, I think. He sounds speculative, like Fangxin is a puzzle that demands his full attention. Fangxin complies and can't prevent the full-throated moan that spills from his lips. His hips jerk up and he freezes. He wasn't told to move like that. Oh, Muching says. Did I say you could do that? No, Fangxin gasps. No, I... He's frozen in place. I didn't mean to, he says. Muching says, still speculative, not angry. Don't do it again unless I say so, he concludes. Keep touching yourself. His voice is low, smooth, focused.
Don't come yet. Fangxin strokes his cock, slowly runs his thumb over the head of his erection, gasps at the sensation.
Do that again, Muqing says, and he does, feeling hazy and achingly aroused.
Time must pass. Fangxin holds onto himself by the barest of edges. He pinches his nipples, runs a hand down his stomach, across the arc of his hip bones. He is finally permitted to fuck into his fist, and it feels so good he can't stop the breathing moans that punch out of him on each thrust. It's heady and unmoored, being so obedient to someone else's commands. It's nothing like the poison, it's so much better. Finally, it's too much.
Please, Fangxin begs. He isn't fucking his fist anymore, is barely touching his cock, following instructions to the letter, trying not to come yet. He's so close. He's been so close.
Please what? Muqing asks.
He's perfectly composed, only leaning very faintly forward to watch as Fangxin shakes apart for him. His eyes narrow.
I don't think I gave you permission to stop, he says.
Please, Fangxin manages, moving, stroking himself again, gasping at the contact. I can't.
You're close? Muqing asks.
Fangxin sobs. He's not just close, he's balanced on the edge of a knife. He's a hair's breadth away from coming, and he doesn't have permission, and he doesn't know how much longer he can hold off for.
Yes, he snarls. Yes!
Muqing settles back, crosses one leg over his knee. He looks thoughtful.
You have been obedient, he muses.
He smiles, small and almost mean, and Fangxin thinks for a heart-stopping moment that it wasn't enough. He wasn't enough. He thinks he might tip over the edge anyway, even without permission.
Please, he gasps.
His free hand is fisted in his robe so hard it hurts. He might be tearing the cloth, he couldn't say.
Yes, Muqing says, and he leans back further in his seat, every inch of his body screaming casual command. Come for me, Fangxin.
Fangxin comes immediately, arcing off the bed with a half-muffled scream. Orgasm rips through him, more powerful than any he can remember, and drags him down into the dark.
The End.